This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. From Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist, here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, hello there, Mike. It's been a long time.
Yeah, it's been a whole week, hasn't
about,
it?
Oh, yeah, about a week.
Yeah, about 7 days or so. And here we are, and it's stinking freezing outside.
Oh, my ex-wife must be in town.
Oh, well, No comment. Well, let's see. At my house this morning was 30.
Mamma mia.
Yeah, it was 30, and so foggy you could hardly see 50 feet.
Mm.
You know?
Not good.
No, and all those hills that I live in, they capture the fog for most of the day, and finally about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, it dissipates.
And by then, it's almost dark.
Yeah, and you're trying to drive through it. I leave about 6 in the morning, and you're driving through it, and that's when the deer seem to pop out in front of you.
Yep.
Oh, hi, how are you?
Good morning.
And then when I'm driving, then some dude comes zipping up on the back of me, and
of course,
you know, and I'm doing 30 watching for deer, and they're impatient, so they want to get on my tailgate.
Sure.
Anyway, enough of the
you don't give weather. Him any hand gestures.
No, of course not. I don't believe in that. I'll just run him off the road.
That works too.
I know. I won't run you off the road. Don't worry. But anyway, thanks for listening. No more traffic reports.
Okay.
You know, and this is a gardening show. Really, it is. And I talk about all kinds of different things all the time. And if you need some ideas or suggestions, I'll gladly speak to you. If you call me and ask, hey, my such and such bush is doing this, what's wrong with it? Or when should I prune it? Or should I fertilize it? Or should I just pull it out and throw it away and start over? And the phone number, 673-4464.
And that's all free advice.
Yeah, free. Yeah, they don't pay me. You don't pay me. Hey, I'm doing this because out of the goodness of my heart.
What do they say, public service?
I'm a public serviceman. 673-4464. So, like I say, ideas, suggestions, you know, just kind of spur something that you're saying, hey, I didn't know I could do that. Or maybe I should do this now, and you know, there's a lot of things that can be done if you have a yard. It's a never-ending process, trust me. But I've got some things that I'm going to talk about, and some of this I repeat over a period of time, simply because of the weather changes. You know, things are getting more dormant now, and there's not a lot of growth, so there's certain things you don't do, and there's certain things you should do to try to catch up on the whole deal. But you know, sometimes when a person goes shopping for plants, they can get overwhelmed with the selection of plants because there's so many different kinds out there. And often if a person isn't familiar with plants, they'll pick out plants that are beautiful or unique without knowing how large they grow or in what soil conditions are needed.
Yeah.
How to take care of them. And oftentimes in the box stores, there is a limited knowledge base for which the customer can ask questions about how large does this grow, what do I do, how do I water it, how do I fertilize it, how do I prune it, all those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Whereas at a nursery like what we run, you know, we've got all that information and we don't even charge you nothing for it. It's all free. It goes with the plant. But here's some of the questions that maybe you should consider and should be asked when you're buying plants, and especially if you don't know what it is. Number one, does this thing grow in the sun or the shade or both or what? Where do I plant it? Does it need dry conditions or wet conditions? And I'm going to go through all of these in a little bit more detail after the list. I've got 10 items on this list that you might think about. Type of soil. What does this plant need? What kind of soil? You know, does it need hard, wet clay, or does it need good topsoil or sand or what? And the ultimate size, you know, in other words, how close should I plant it to my back porch or my back deck? And should I plant it in the lawn or not plant it in the lawn? Will it ruin my lawn or will it not even grow in the lawn? And then the type of fertilizer that I use when to fertilize. what's the watering schedule? And I harp on all these things all the time, you know.
No, not you.
No, I know. But sometimes people have to hear things 206 times before it finally dawns on them, oh, yeah, I've heard that. I better watch out.
You know, they got to process it.
Yeah, there's a process there. close to structures? Do I plant this close to structures? Is it going to destroy my house or what? How close do I put it to other plants? In other words, how big will this be, and will it overtake whatever plants I have in the ground at this point? So, mm-hmm. You know, that's, I have found that most plant buyers don't ask any questions. You have to volunteer, and say, do you know how to take care of this? Well, I've never had one before, or yeah. I don't know how big it gets, and so I ask them about their yard, and well, what do you want to do with it? Are you just kind of planting it in a planting bed, or you want to put it near the front entry, or you know what exactly is the purpose of that, you know, that particular plant? And they'll say, well, this and this, and I'll okay. So I always give the customer this information so that they'll have success with their plants. I want them to have success. I want them to rave about the plants they bought from Wintergreen Nursery for crying out loud. Yes. So anyway, let's start with number one little thing. You know, okay. Does it take sun or shade? Well, most plants can take either sun or shade, and there are exceptions to that. But they can live, and there are some that can't take full sun, and there are some that'll burn up, you know, when it's mid July and the leaves are turning brown, and you've done everything you think you should, and it still croaks because it's not a full sun type plant, and then others can live in shade, but won't perform to their capacity if it's too shady, you know, because they need a little bit of sun, like maybe morning sun, afternoon shade, which is kind of like the best of both worlds, especially for rhodies, azaleas, camellias, and things like that. But there's, you know, several hundred others that could take the same deal. So you always want to question where's this plant going to grow best? You know, what kind of climate conditions in my yard shall I create for this? That's a good question. You know, if you don't know, ask, for crying out loud.
Yeah, don't kill the plant.
No, don't spend $10, $20, $30 on something and then go home and then 2 weeks later it's deader than a doornail because of what you did. Which brings me to point number two.
Okay.
Wet or dry.
Uh-oh.
Yes. Now, willows, some ferns, poplar trees, quaking aspen, they love wet ground and will do quite well.
Quaking what?
Quaking aspen.
Aspen, okay.
They are the white-trunked trees that you'll see at a higher elevation, like if you go from here to Bend or from here to Klamath Falls and you get up to the tops of the mountains where, you know, you're 4,000-foot elevation, and you'll see a grove of these, and all the trunks will be white, and there'll be just a mass of them, and they can grow in standing water, for crying out loud.
Jeez.
Where
I'll have to keep an eye out
for them. It's not one you'd want to plant in your lawn, because I had an experience with that once with a client. She wanted a new lawn. Yeah. I went out to see her, and she says, you can't miss my place. I got a lot of quaking aspens in the lawn. I said, So I pull in. It's out there on Buckhorn Road. And I pulled in, and I could not believe it was a quaking aspen forest.
Oh, geez.
And she had a circular driveway all the way around. And so the lawn was inside the circular driveway. And it was, you know, fairly large area. Mm-hmm. And I got talking to her, and she said, you know, I only started with one. And there were probably a good 30 quaking aspens in there from one, just from one.
How long did that take, Bobby?
I told her that she should find somebody else to take all these quaking aspens out, then call me up when that was done and we could take a look at it.
We'll go from there.
Yeah, get somebody with a logging truck in here and let them take those out.
Yeah.
But you know, quaking aspens love wet ground. So she had a lawn going from, and then there was one in there, you know, watering the lawn all the time, and that quaking aspen puts out these roots and goes boom, 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 boom.
We love you.
Yeah, oh, this is great. Hey, throw some more water on us. But But they do quite well. And like I say, poplar trees, willow trees, you know, any kind of a willow. You cut a willow branch and stick it in water and it'll grow. but the majority of plants that we have around here, they need good drainage and only weekly watering in the summertime to survive. For instance, if you plant an evergreen tree in an irrigated lawn, it will most likely die from too much water because you're watering the lawn. You want to keep the lawn green. Well, that tree, most, not every evergreen, but most evergreens won't. Like the, there's a tree at the courthouse that is going to come out because they planted it in a lawn and it frankly got too much water.
Is that the giant?
Sequoia.
Yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh. But so like firs, pines, spruces, cedars, giant sequoias, they're not going to live in wet ground. There's not their natural habitat.
They like the desert.
Yeah. Now, the one exception to that would be a coastal redwood. Now, coastal redwoods, they grow naturally in our coastal areas, especially if you go down to Crescent City area, down, you know, from Grants Pass that way. The closer you get to the coast within, say, 30 miles, all of a sudden you start seeing these redwoods, you know, here and there. And then the closer you get into the fog belt and it gets kind of flat. And it gets a heck of a lot more rain than we do. And then that's where the Redwood National Forest is. Redwood National Park.
Interesting.
And, yeah, and it's solid redwoods, and the only things growing in between them are ferns. Nothing else is grown. Redwoods and ferns. It's very, very, very nice. Very
they don't
want
to share much, do they?
No, they don't, because nothing else will grow in there. Because the root systems, you know, some of those redwoods are 10 feet around, 15 feet around.
Yeah.
I mean, they're 1,000 years old and all that, and nothing else can compete. Think of a tree that's, say, 170 feet tall and 10-foot diameter,
wow,
and what that root system would be to keep it in place like that. Well, nothing else can compete with that. So if you put one of those in your lawn at home, watch out. Because, you know, 15 generations later, they're going to have a problem with that tree
a
in the front
problem.
Yard. Yeah, right. Oh, golly. But like I say, the Coast Redwoods loves it. They just love it because over there they get a lot of rain. Now, a giant sequoia, which is some people mix up giant sequoias and coastal redwoods. Giant sequoias, they live in high country, high elevation, where they get snow, cold, and the ground is not, you know, real good. It's kind of dry and rocky, and they do great. They do really great. The opposite of a redwood. And it, like I say, the high elevation, you know, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 foot elevation, that's typical for one of those. And they're the soil moisture is really only from the snowpack, because at that elevation it doesn't rain much. It might rain in the summer a little bit, but usually they have 8 or 10 feet of snow. So as the 8 or 10 feet of snow, as spring comes, it starts to melt, but it doesn't melt all at once. It doesn't cause a flood. It drips, and it drips slowly. So,
it kind of stores
Exactly. So that tree is not being inundated or flooded or drowned, but it's using the available moisture, and that's why it does so well there. So,
well, that makes sense why it didn't live here at the courthouse.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Too wet, moist, and
Well, it's in a lawn. It's in the middle of a lawn, and they water the lawn.
Wonder whose idea that was.
Well, I'm not going to say.
Oh.
Oh, golly.
Wasn't the governor, was it?
No, she's not that smart. But point number three, the type of soil is very important. Like, we have predominantly a clay soil here in Douglas County.
Can we continue with point three after?
Yeah, point three we'll come right back to.
And that is correct. We'll be right back in a couple of minutes. Mike Winters, Lawn and Garden Show, News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All righty, my friend, we are back. Point number three.
Well, no, I think that's point number four.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, I finished with three.
See, I went to Sutherland. I can't.
Yeah, well, you know, you guys. I was already, or was I talking about clay soil?
You were, I believe.
Okay, well, that is point number three.
Is it?
You're correct. I am wrong.
Uh-oh. Oh, no.
Yes, I can freely admit that. I made a mistake. So the clay soil that we predominantly have here in Douglas County, and I've said this at least 1,000 times in the last 20 years that I've been on this show, that you just can't dig a hole in the clay, stick something in there that's been grown in good, beautiful nursery soil, mm-hmm. and expect it to live, because it can't penetrate, the root systems cannot penetrate mm-hmm. the clay, and usually the clay is too wet too long, and consequently it rots whatever roots try to grow, and mm-hmm. consequently the plant will die. So you have to amend it and put some good stuff in there. Nice topsoil, a little bit of sand, maybe a little bit of bark, a little bit of potting soil, mix it all up, and that's what you plant it in. So you oversize the hole. You dig it larger and deeper and put enough stuff in there, good stuff, that mm-hmm. That root system will go, wow, I love it, it's great. And as it grows and becomes mature and the roots are more vigorous, it can get into the surrounding clay, you know, mm-hmm. Because it has the stamina, you know, it's been in there, say, a year, maybe two, and it's reaching the clay, and it's okay. It does well. So that's what you want to think about when you're doing that. And look at your soil, test it, walk around, see where, and most of Douglas County is clay. Now, clay is good in one respect. It is highly nutritious because it doesn't drain well. So the nutrients in the soil mm-hmm. doesn't drain away. Mm-hmm. It stays. And so consequently, if you can make the best of both worlds there, mm-hmm. you have success with your planting.
Gotcha.
Okay. I'm glad somebody does. I wasn't sure for a minute there.
No.
Okay.
I always have that dumb look on my face.
Oh, gosh, you got me there. All right, ultimate size, point four, ultimate size. This is important when planting trees near structures. And so how many times have you heard me say this?
Size matters.
Yes, structures, driveways or sidewalks, you mm-hmm. know, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Give them some space. A large growing tree can cost large sums of money when it breaks up your sidewalk or your driveway or the foundation of your house. I've seen trees planted and big, large growing shrubs planted too close to foundations mm-hmm. that actually over the years, maybe 20 years,
right.
but the root system is very mature at that time and mm-hmm. very large, and it actually causes cracks in the foundation. You know, or bulges up in the lawn
right,
and the roots are
right.
on the surface of the lawn. So you can't mow your lawn because you'll wreck your lawnmower trying to mow those roots. Or the sidewalk is cracked and raised.
Yeah.
You know, it happens all the time. I'll bet you within two blocks of where we're sitting, we could walk around in a big circle and find
uneven.
Yes, exactly. And plus the clay moves, too. It has a tendency to rise when it's wet and sink and shrink when it's dry.
I never knew that. Okay.
Yeah, it does. Check it out next summer. But anyway, you need to be aware of how big is this guy getting yet? And that's why you got to ask the questions. Is this tree going to get 40 feet tall or 4 feet tall? Is the shrub going to do this or is it going to do that? Why you have a person that actually runs a nursery and plants plants and grows plants and knows plants, you won't get the right answers. If it's just, oftentimes, box stores, the people that work in the garden center, some of them have some knowledge, that's
right.
true, but then some others don't, and, mm-hmm. you know, they're there to sell plants, but they don't have the background in plant materials.
The knowledge.
the knowledge of, you know, what different soils do, or what does the sun do, or what does too much water do. And so they don't have that experience to answer your question so that you can have success. And it's not, they're not bad people. They just don't know.
They don't,
And that's.
You don't know, you don't know.
Yeah, what can you say? Yeah, just water the snot out of it, buddy.
Make sure it's planted.
Yeah, right. But think about this: if you got a big old tree too close to the house, with it looked good for the first 5 years, and then the next 5 years, some of the limbs started growing over the roof, and you go, "Whoa, what the heck?" And those limbs got bigger and larger, and we had snowmageddon, and they broke and hit your roof and put a hole in it, huh?
Well, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, it's, I know it sounds familiar. And then you got leaves that fall into the gutter systems and plug up the gutter systems. And then roof repairs are very costly.
Oh,
and clogged gutters can direct your water into your siding and ruin your walls on the exterior and the interior.
Right.
So that's why you want to say, okay, this tree is going to get so big, I've got so much space, I've got to keep it at least 30 feet from the house, or 40 feet if you got the room, you know, and I'll still get the shade. It'll take longer to shade the area I want it to shade, but I'm not going to have long-term problems and roof repairs and the gutters falling off, you know, that kind of thing. So,
and then it gets never-ending, blah, blah, blah,
Oh, yeah, it just goes. Okay, now, point number five.
Yes.
Should I plant in the lawn or not? Well, again, some of this is repetitious, but if you do plant in a lawn, you want to make sure that you construct a large mound. Let's say you want to put a tree out there or a shrub, whatever. Construct a mound, say 4 feet, 5 feet in diameter, and 2 feet higher than the existing lawn, and plant the plant, the tree, or whatever in that mound, and that way you're gonna save it from being drowned by lawn watering, and it over time can adapt to wetter conditions and confine itself to the mound. And with a shrub, that's not too much trouble, but with a tree, once it's growing well, it can adapt somewhat to that wetter ground, and that's one way of doing it. And it's just, you're preventing overwater, and you're preventing surface root growth. So the two problems I talked about just previously, those are corrected in that way. Because when you get tree roots in the lawn, as I said, they're a hazard, and they're going to wreck a lawnmower in a hot minute. You know,
it's no fun.
You see them there, and you go, "Oh yeah, there's some roots." Whack, and one of the blades flies through the mower wall or something like that,
and hit your neighbor.
Yeah. Oh gosh. So point six.
Yeah.
Point six. Fertilizers.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Okay, again, I've said it 100 times. Buy the right plant food for your shrubs or your trees. There's the generic stuff. You know, like a lot of people say, "Well, I get triple 16 at the co-op." Well, that's good for pastures. That's great for pastures. It was designed for pastures. It wasn't designed for home loans. It wasn't designed for azaleas. It wasn't designed for fruit trees. It's if you use it, you have to be very, very careful that you didn't overdo it, because it's a triple 16% nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. And that's a large, right across the board, formula.
Sounds like it, yeah.
So, like I say, one type does not work for all plants, so you want to stick to a schedule and the correct dose. A little bit goes a long ways, and overfeeding can kill a plant very quickly, just like overwatering can. So you want to read the directions. You want to do it correctly, because and there's so many different types of fertilizers, and you can read the labels. You know, there's fertilizer just for bulbs, daffodils and those kinds of things, and then there's fertilizer specifically for rhododendrons and azaleas. Then there's fertilizers for trees, and then there's a different formula for hanging baskets. They're all different, and just the fertilizer per se is not going to just all of a sudden kill a tree, but it doesn't
any good.
It doesn't give it the maximum ability to absorb and grow and do a good job for you. It's that simple.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And schedule your type of fertilizing to get the most bang for the buck. Be wary of feeding newly planted plants. In other words, you don't plant an azalea and get it in the ground, tamp it down, and then put a handful of fertilizer around it. You're signing its death warrant.
You got to give it a chance.
You got to give it a chance because you just transplanted it. It's already got a little shock on it, and all of a sudden, this hot fertilizer gets into the roots and is going, "Wow, man, I can't."
Do you hear that, Dad?
Yeah, you hear that, Dad? But if you can't help yourself and you have to do it very, very lightly. You know. And then wait for a month or two to give it to the new plant. Just don't do it the same day unless you're an expert at growing things, all right? But, you know, in a month or two after it's kind of settled and you can see that it's actively growing, good, go ahead, give it a little bit. But give it that time to establish. And if, for instance, the directions say a tablespoon for, you know, X amount of growth or whatever, just use half of that amount.
Oh.
You know, just half. That you know, and because you can always add more if it needs more. And a good time to feed your plants or your lawn is in early spring while it's still raining, you know, February, March, kind of in there. And you do it lightly. And it could be late February, probably, because of weather is starting to turn and the plants are starting to wake up and come out of their dormancy and all that kind of stuff. And then again in May, because it's in that active growth mode then. That's when you want to maximize your growth. And you give it another small handful or half a handful or a tablespoon or, you know, according to the size of the plant and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then no food for the summer. Let it go. You know, just ignore it. And it's got enough. You've already done it. It's growing actively. You're good to go. And then come around, you know, end of October, November, we get this rainy stuff. Give it a little bit more.
Cold.
Yeah, but give it a little bit more. And what will happen is the rains continue, that fertilizer, I'm saying this is a granular food, it will dissipate and then get down into the root systems. But the root systems are dormant, so they're not going to absorb it. But it's there when spring rolls around, early spring, and then the root systems wake up and begin to absorb this, and they get a real good head start.
Whoa, what's this stuff?
Yeah, well, candy. Let's go. Oh, man. But after the plants are established, say, 2 or 3 years, you can cut back on your fertilizer to, say, once a year in early spring because they're going, they're rooted out, they're getting that nutrition from the soil that's there. They're into the clay, which is, like I say, very full of nutrients, and they're gonna go. But and like I say, if it needs it, you can add a little bit. Just don't overdo it.
Right.
We got a break?
We do. Here we go.
Okay.
What do we got coming up?
Oh, point eight, watering schedule.
There you go.
Yep.
Something to look forward to.
Yeah, I've only said it about 300 times, so.
News Radio 1240 KQEN with the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, good afternoon once again. It is 4:39, and we were about to do more watering.
Well, hopefully not.
Lack of.
Hopefully not right now, but that's point number 8. And if you have a question, 673-4464, any questions, fair game, and we'll have a conversation. I won't yell out of you or nothing like that. And but anyway, I was talking about questions that should be asked if you're a first-time plant buyer or even a person who knows plants but finds new ones. And you need to ask the questions. Well, you know, where does it go? What does it need? You know, sun, shade, water, fertilizer, soil, you know, all those things. And we're at point number 8, watering schedule. I mean, you're probably tired of hearing me talk about watering. But obviously from fall to spring, no watering needed, okay? In the spring, test your soil for moisture before you begin to throw the water on it. And the best and most accurate test is to feel the soil with your hands.
Get
you
down
know,
there,
you
baby.
Got these little probes you can stick in there, and a needle goes up and says wet or dry or whatever. Yeah, well, they're not what you call accurate. Yeah, it might be moist, but how moist? If you stick your hands in there and you can actually feel it and you can squeeze the soil and water drips out, you know, it's very moist. Or if you squeeze it and nothing comes out, it's just right maybe. Mm. So feel the soil, you know, dig down about, say, 4 to 6 inches, you know, beside the plant, whether it's a tree, shrub, or whatever, mm-hmm. and get below the bark mulch if you got bark mulch down there or rocks or whatever. Just feel the soil, and if it feels damp, you're pretty good to go, because the deeper you go, the wetter it's going to be, and where the bottom of the roots are, it's going to be, you know, 2-3 times as moist as where you're feeling. So that's your best indicator, and like I say, if it's wet, forget it, and repeat this once a month until the soil feels dry, and then when it feels dry at that depth, then you can start your watering program. And this method is for really newly planted items. As plants grow and the roots mature, less water is needed. Each yard is different because of the slope, you know, the steepness of the slope, or if it's flat, or if, you know, the soil type, is it in full sun, full shade? And what you have to do, get to know your yard, see what it really needs, and if you do this, you're going to have great success in whatever you plant. It's really that simple. And in the long run, you learn about that, and it's going to save you a ton of money when things don't die and they actually live for a long time. And you go, wow, this is really neat. My yard looks good. Point number 9. Do I plant close to structures?
Why not?
Well, plants grow, so when you plant a small tree or shrub, and I already spoke about this a little bit earlier, picture what it's going to look like in 5 years. If you can't picture it, look it up on your internet thingy and say, what's a plant look like in 5 years, okay? Or ask, what's that, Siri? Okay, ask whatever. Siri, hey, how big is this rhododendron going to be in 5 years, Siri? And she'll call,
I don't have that information. Ask Mike Winters.
Yeah.
But anyway, gosh. But, you know, if you plant a shrub a foot or two from the foundation or the sidewalk or a street, you're going to have problems with it in the long run because it's going to overgrow that area. And if that, say that plant grows 5 feet wide and 7 feet tall, you got a problem and an overdue pruning process and an overdue pruning program. So plant shrubs with lots of space around them to grow. Yeah, they're small when you put them in, and you go, well, gee whiz, they're too small and they're 7 feet apart. Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. It's okay. They'll grow. It'll blow your mind. And I got practical experience in this, having done some of these same mistakes in my early landscaping years, thinking, oh, I need some more plants in there and make it look fuller, right? And then I had to pull them out with a chain in a four-wheel drive truck after a few years. So, you know, that's not fun.
Yeah, no.
But, you know, give them lots of space. And in small beds, like, planting bed along your foundation, say it's a 3-foot-wide bed, put small plants in there. Plants that, like if it's in the afternoon shade, some azaleas would probably work. You know, something small that's not going to be overwhelming that you can actually prune and keep in shape, and it'll always look good. But you don't want to put a rhododendron in there, because a rhododendron eventually is going to grow, you know, most of them are eventually going to grow 10 feet tall and 10 feet wide if you let them, but it won't do real well if it's pushed up against the wall, and it's going to ruin your paint job too, and then you're going to have to paint the
wall.
It's going to
make its own room.
Yeah. But shade trees, they need a lot of space. Don't crowd them, or 10 years in the future, you've got to remove them or put a new roof on, or do both. And I'm being repetitious, but sometimes you got to be repetitious, because maybe there's some new folks listening and they're going, wow, I didn't know that. So now you know. Point 10. When I'm called for like a home consultation, I give consultations and all that, or a new landscape design. Yeah. Most of the time, I see plants overgrown for that particular spot. You know, somebody planted this 10, 15 years ago, and maybe the folks just bought the place and just moved in, and it's so much of a jungle, they don't know what to do with it, so they call me up, and we have a consultation. And, you know, the plants are overgrown. Parts of them are dying because there's no room for them to grow. And they're crowding other plants, and they're up against the wall or the fence or whatever. And sometimes the homeowner needs to remove about 50% of the shrubs and then prune those that remain. And people cringe when you say, well, you're going to have to take out every other one, and then the ones that you leave, you're going to have to prune them about 50% and keep them that way. And, you know, their eyes roll and go, wow, I don't know how to do that. Can you give me a bid? Yeah, and I give them a bid, and we can do it. And then they're surprised at what their planting bed looks like after we're done. But it's more healthy. It'll come back better. It'll look better. And if they see it done once, they can repeat the process themselves and do that maybe once or twice a year. A light pruning keeps everything in shape, and you don't have that big mess on your hands, and you actually see the walls or the fence or whatever through the branches. So that's what you need to know. So enough of that stuff, because I've repeated a lot of the stuff, that a lot of points about that over the years, and so I'm going to go to a new subject, and I'm going to talk about olive trees. Yes, olive trees in Douglas County. Olive trees are not common, of course, in Oregon, but the right varieties do well, especially in southern Oregon, because we get a little bit more sunshine and dry weather than, say, Portland. And but olive trees, they range from, you know, Mexico, Texas, Arizona, clear up into southern British Columbia, depending on the variety of them, which variety. So years ago, I was driving up through Central California on I-5. I went to one of my son's ball games, and I'm driving up through there, and I see this big sign. I don't know if it said the Olive Garden or the Olive something or other.
Yeah.
And it was all by itself out in all this agricultural country. Mm-hmm. So I pulled in there, and that's what they specialized in. There was a lot of olive groves around
that makes sense.
They had everything you can think about olives. They had it in this big old store. And they also had some olive plants. Oh. You could buy a plant. I went, wow, how cool. They are really cool looking. So I bought one. And I didn't know what the variety was, and they didn't ask me any questions like, where do you live? Where are you going to plant it? You know, all the stuff I just went through.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, shoot, I'll just, you know, they're growing outside here in Central California. They must grow in Roseburg and Douglas County.
Yeah, right.
Sure.
Well, it grew well that summer.
Oh.
And then the first bit of cool weather came along, and I forgot to take it in to the greenhouse to protect it. And it silently went to olive heaven.
Oh.
I mean, it was gone, baby.
Bye-bye.
It was. We had one of those, you know, drop down to about 30 degrees for two nights.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally spaced it out until I walked back. I was on the back porch of the nursery, which is somewhat protected, but still 32 degrees.
No escaping.
No, there is no escaping that. And it was kind of shriveled. I tried to revive it, but it just didn't have enough juice to come back. So,
yeah.
You know, and I thought, well, there must be olives that can grow in this country. And I did some research, and there are a few varieties of olives, like I say, grow well and will withstand snowmageddon and freezing conditions and lots of rain and heat and, you know, the whole gamut of weather that we have in any one cycle in a year.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And in doing my research, I found there are varieties of olives that will grow clear up into southern British Columbia. And there are olive groves in British Columbia, which, you know, that was news to me.
Wow. Yeah.
They are tough.
They get a lot more rain up there, don't they?
It was rain, snow, and some places it's a lot colder up in the Okanagan Valley, which is inland from, you know, the coastal parts, which is kind of semi-arid, kind of like Bend.
Okay.
But colder and I think more snow, you know, in that part of the world.
Can we take a break?
You want to take a break?
We do.
Am I talking too much?
No!
Okay, we'll be back
with more Olive Talk.
Olive trees.
News Radio 1240 KQEN, Mike Winters, Lawn and Garden Show.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Alrighty, 4:53 and a chilly 41 degrees. And we're back with Mike Winters, Lawn and Garden Show for this Wednesday. And
we're talking olives. And I already told you how I killed my first one by leaving it outside one day too long.
Like this kind of weather.
Yeah, right. But then I did some research and looked, are there any olive trees that can survive in our kind of climate? Well, by golly, there are a few. And this one that I have here in the studio today that nobody can see is called a black Spanish olive, and has black olives. And there is a grower up on Lone Rock Road in Glide that has 7,000 of these trees in the ground. And it's quite a display of olive trees. And it's right on the North Umpqua. And I think 2 years ago, there was an article in the paper that he had done his first olive oil harvest. And his trees are relatively young. But out of his grove, he made 720 pints of olive oil to put on the market. So, and he has, he sells them to different...
And that's, the olive oil's expensive.
Oh, yeah. And it's healthy.
Yeah.
It's good. You drink
a
spoonful of it, and it's good.
Yeah.
But the black Spanish olive, and then we're growing another one called Luca olive. And I don't know much about the Luca. I've been trying to do research on it, and it's a fast grower. Looks good, looks healthy, has survived everything so far for the last 2 years. And the olives are evergreens. They don't they lose leaves, but not all at once, and they're never real bare or anything like that. But this one, this black Spanish olive, it's an evergreen, and the leaves are long and slender, proportionally long for the tree.
Yeah.
And they're kind of gray-green in color. It's a beautiful tree, and... I've been growing these for about 8 to 10 years. I'm not sure because I've been experimenting and failing, and then some success, and then I try to compound my success. And so now we got a lot of olive trees at the nursery, but I grow them not for their olive production, or because a tree. I like them because they're unique. And they're not very common in our area.
No.
And it makes a nice landscape statement as a small yard tree. People say, well, I want a tree, but I don't want it to get to be, 50-foot maple. Okay, well, this olive tree will do the trick. And like I say, it's evergreen. It looks good. And guess what? It's not fast-growing, so it's not going to overtake anything, but it produces olives at an early age. And it produces olive oil if you know how to process them. Now, I don't know the process. I'm going to learn the process. I want to go visit this guy. I finally got this guy's phone number today.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, my wife looked it up on the magic internet thingy.
Mm-hmm.
and I'm going to call him and go visit him and pound his brain for all the knowledge that he has.
I wonder if he listens.
Well, you never know. Maybe he listened and went out and bought 7,000 trees. I'm not sure. But... At the nursery, if you want to try an olive tree, just to see if it'll grow, I've got some that, that are 4 feet tall, and some that are 2 feet tall, and some like this little one is about a foot, maybe.
Yeah, a foot. About that.
Yeah. So, and they they're not fast growers, but they're in the moderate range. And like I say, they like sun, they like hot, and they do well. They like our warm summer temperatures. And like I say, Snowmageddon didn't kill any of mine.
Didn't kill them.
Yeah, and there was snow all over them. So I thought, oh, gosh, this is it. I'm done with my olive business. No, it worked really well.
Gone down in snow.
Yeah, yeah. So Snowmageddon had no negative effect.
Nice.
And like I said, the company in Glide, and I forgot to bring their name to give them some free advertising.
Next week.
But they had 7,000 black Spanish olives.
My gosh.
And in 2 years ago, like I say, they pottled their first crop of olive oil and made 700 points of
pints.
Pints of points. I don't know. But I'm going to visit them. And when I drove up to their gate, it was closed and locked. So I didn't do anything. I just looked at the grove. It was beautiful. Mm. And they're just really, really pretty. It's impressive. And then my wife found another variety named the Luca, and they'll do well in Douglas County. And I found out that we were growing some that I didn't even know about. My daughter had gotten them started, so now I've got two varieties.
There you go. You're ahead of the game.
I'm ahead of the game. And again, the Luca is grown mainly for olive oil, and it was developed at the University of California, I don't know how many years ago. But the Luca grows faster than the black Spanish olive, so I'm going to put them to the test. I'm going to grow a couple out in my field in the good ground and see what they do.
Yeah.
And they do well. They grow well from cuttings. And next, like I said, I have to learn how to make olive oil. There's a process, and you got to do it right or it doesn't work. And
that'd be a waste of olives, wouldn't it?
Waste of olives, yes. But like I said earlier, they grow as far north as British Columbia.
Mm.
And, they're going to grow here. And, you know, I'm surprised that some of the vineyards haven't started olive groves with their, because it seems like it grows well and it goes well with wine. Because in Texas, I saw that happening with vineyards and olive trees in the same property. You go in there and you're talking to the owners, and they were growing the same type of olive that I got here down in Texas, only they were huge. They were 30 feet tall, and they were beautiful old
trees. Everything's bigger in Texas, they say.
That's what they say. I've seen it. I believe it.
Where are you located in Winston, Mike?
Oh, we're about half mile south of Winston on Highway 99, and look for all the green. All our roofs are green. Can't miss us. We're the second nursery on the left, half a mile south of Winston.
Good enough.
Come
we'll
on
see
down.
You next week.
I hope so.